We all know Michiganians we feel are extraordinary for their memorable life experiences or their sacrifices, maybe for their success or their service or the insights that they produce. Getting acquainted with extraordinary people is the focus of Current State's ongoing series, Voices of Experience. Pauline Adams traces her life in East Lansing back to 1947. That's when she, her husband, future university president Walter Adams, and their infant son Jim traveled from New York City to Michigan State College. And that's where the native New Yorkers, who met on a blind date, would begin the next chapter in their young lives. Walter Adams would climb through the ranks and become renowned as a university leader, particularly during the riotous late 60s when he served 9 months as president. Pauline Adams would make her own mark. She would spend nearly 60 years teaching in MSU classrooms, a tenure that ended only last year, a life dedicated to education and to family. I recently sat down with Pauline Adams to talk about her life. She first explained that her love affair with teaching began when she was young.
When I was 12 years old, my aunt, who lived in the neighborhood and had a daughter, Phyllis, and she said, Pauline, can you help Phyllis and teach her how to play the piano? Because I had already taken piano lessons for several years. Not that I was a good pianist. I don't want to misrepresent myself.
But you knew more than Phyllis.
But I knew more than Phyllis, and I loved to teach. So I said, sure, I was willing to teach anything. And so I started teaching Phyllis when I was 12. Well, Phyllis lived in an apartment building with an interior courtyard, and some of the neighbors heard her play, practice, and they said, who's your piano teacher? And within a few short years, by the time I was about 16, I had 21 students. So that was my beginning as a teacher, and I didn't let up until this year. And this year, finally, I said, you've got to give in to your body, and you can no longer do it for the sake of your students. And so I'm fully retired, although I retired from Michigan State 22 years ago in 1992. But then I went on to teach in the lifelong education program until today.
Tell us about that blind date on which you met Walter.
Well, all I remember about it is that my very close girlfriend was dating this guy. And she said he had a very close friend, Walter. And would I be interested to have a double date with him and go out with Walter? I had never met him. And I did. And it clicked. At least it clicked for me, because I really fell for him immediately. I wouldn't say the contrary was true. I mean, I'm not sure where he stood.
Guys are like that, you know.
Well, they may be, but this guy was. In any case, and we dated and got married.
You and he came to Michigan State in 1947. That must have been significant culture shock. Can you talk about the differences between New York and East Lansing that really stuck out?
Well, for me, it was exciting. It took us 2.5 days to travel here. We had a 6-month-old infant, and we came by car. I took an overnight ferry from Buffalo to Detroit, had a cabin on the ferry. The car was on the ferry, and then we got off and drove down here. There was no I-96 or anything like that.
And you took the boat from Buffalo to Detroit? Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so and it took us 2.5 days. And then we drove down Grand River all the way through little towns to East Lansing and arrived on a Sunday and went directly to the apartment we had been given on Cherry Lane, the new buildings for new faculty. As a matter of fact, all the bricks were not on our building, 801 Cherry Lane, when we arrived. And I did have quite a culture shock, but it wasn't a shock to me. It was an adventure. I can't explain it. I was very excited by everything that I saw and how different it was. And it was fun for me, but a little bit of a challenge, I will say.
What was Michigan State like in 1947? What do you remember from the campus then?
Well, it was a much more an agricultural college. For instance, up on Shore Lane, I think it was, from our apartments, because Cherry Lane started at Shore Lane, there was some barns with cows and animals in it, and I used to wheel my my son past these barns to see them before they moved away, obviously. I watched the erection of Kellogg Center. I used to wheel him over to the construction site. And Walter's office was in Morrill Hall at the time. And I used to take Jim there every day to pick him up at 5 o'clock to come home for dinner. We walked back together.
And we just lost Morrill Hall. Interesting.
I know. When we lost the brick apartments. So all the brick apartments on Cherry Lane were, and it's, they just disappeared with these lovely green fields replacing them. And when that happened, I really had a sense that part of my life had been erased. It was a strange feeling, and it's irrational. But I remember I was attending a Board of Trustees meeting when I first heard that they were going to abolish those buildings, just destroy them. And I said something aloud, and a man in front of me, whom I didn't know, in the audience sector of the meeting, turned around and said to me, "Do you remember which building you lived in?" And I said, "Oh, yes, of course, 801 Cherry Lane." And he said, "Would you like a brick from that building?" And I said, "I'd love it." And then I didn't, and he took my name. I didn't hear anything further. So I forgot about it. Several months later, I get a telephone call from a man, and he said, "Do you still want your brick from 801 Cherry Lane?" I said, "Of course." And he came over with the brick from 801 Cherry Lane. So I now have a brick, a sad, sad brick, worn with time and age, sitting on a lovely wooden block in front of my fireplace from 801 Cherry Lane.
Our guest is Pauline Adams here on Current State's Voices of Experience on WKAR. You taught here in the infamous Quonset huts, no less. What did you teach, and how were the classes different then than they are now?
I taught a course which most people would remember by the name of American Thought and Language.
I remember it well.
But when I taught it, it wasn't called American Thought and Language. There were two previous names for the department. The two previous names were Written and Spoken English and then Communication Skills. And when they changed that whole syllabus, it was a wonderful, I thought it was a wonderful change for all the professors who taught it as well as for the students who took it, because it was truly a general education course, which the university college was set up to be, an intermingling of different specializations. And it's now called Writing, Rhetoric, and American Culture.
Okay. Right. Your husband, Walter Adams, was a distinguished economics professor and was the president of Michigan State University for 9 months. In 1969, folks will remember that this was a time of a great deal of student protest and unrest. Tell us of your memories of how he handled that period and what you had to do as his spouse to support him during that time.
Well, when I look back upon it now, I'm almost ashamed to say that we sort of led rather independent lives in the sense that I was still teaching full time. And I which involved all that my teaching required, which was almost my full attention, as well as my duties as a housewife. And he was completely involved in what was going on this tempestuous campus at that time. I was always there, but in the background. Mm. I would attend certain functions that he had to go to. And I became involved in the march to the governor's mansion during protesting the Vietnam War. I was involved in that, but in the background. I can honestly say that all his involvement in these various confrontations and crisis situations, I was not personally involved in. And he did a very informative job of writing that one period of his life up in the only memoir he has ever written, even though I implored him to write others when he retired. He would not write. But that one year he did write up in a book called The Test. So I don't know firsthand. I knew some of the students involved in all the protest movements and what was going on, because he'd bring them to the house and they'd have discussions sometimes around the fireplace, etc., about what was going on. And I did get to know some of the leaders in the protest movements, etc., who were wonderful people, I will say.
As his wife, I imagine you thought he was a great president, but did you imagine how after his tenure he would become so revered as leading MSU through such a difficult time?
What I admired him most for was his ability to dampen the riotous impulse of a lot of the students here, not only here, but throughout the country, and what was happening throughout the country with police involvement and in some cases killings, as you know, that did not happen here. And it was due to Walter and the way he handled it.
How did he handle that?
He handled it by deliberately getting involved personally with the students in their protest. He would be there at every protest. He refused to call the police to attack them, even though the chief of the campus police was always with him, but not in uniform. And he just wouldn't call out the police. And he did realize that you had to be pragmatic as well as dampen emotions in order to survive without serious consequences during this tumultuous times.
He couldn't have agreed with them all the time, I imagine.
He didn't agree with them much of the time, but that wasn't the issue. The issue was not in agreement. The issue was to maintain a certain calm and rationality here on campus when a lot of the country was in flames. And that was his goal. He didn't necessarily achieve, he knew he would never achieve perfection. What I admired him most for was, one, that he was able to achieve that at Michigan State, which many other university presidents throughout the country did not achieve. And secondly, that he knew himself well enough that what he was a teacher. What he was a researcher and writer in his field, that he didn't want the presidency full-time. And even when the end of his year in office, he was offered the presidency and offered presidencies of other colleges, of other universities in the country, he always said no. And he did teach one course during the time he was president. Mm. So that to him, and he knew himself well enough the power and status and money and prestige that goes with the presidency did not attract him that much. And for that, I really admired him.
So both of you were meant to be in the classroom.
I think so. Yeah. Oh, I know so. And my son as well. So, but not my grandsons.
Tell us about your teaching more recently here. You taught evening college here for a period of time. What was that like? And remind us again, when did you retire?
I retired officially from Michigan State in 1992. But I couldn't stand the thought of not teaching. And so I thought I'd ease into retirement by offering a course in the evening college, which I did the year after I retired. And I enjoyed it so much, I wanted to go on. And so I went on for 22 years.
Walter died in 1998. How did your life change after that?
I was alone. For the first time, I was alone. And I want to say, this you may be interested in, that what kept me company was WKAR. When he died, that radio became my companion. I had it on all the time when I was in the house. Alone, it was a human voice, because I listened, I'm ashamed to say, mainly AM, the talk radio. And it was a human voice. It was my...
A connection.
It was a connection. It meant I wasn't alone. Maybe if I had a pet, I would not have listened to WKAR as often, but I didn't have a pet. But I had a lot of friends. I was very busy and involved. And as a result, I manage.
What do you enjoy doing most these days?
My life, of course, has slowed down. Until now, when I fully retired, I always had my lesson, my course preparation, because each year in the evening college when I taught a different course. It was never the same. So I always had to come up with a new course, and that kept me very well occupied. I worked very hard on it. Now, just keeping up with my household obligations, with my bookkeeping, with my social life, I am very closely involved with many friends. That makes my life very full. And reading, of course, which is important to me.
What do you like to read?
Well, I like to read almost everything. One of my mainstays is the New Yorker magazine, which I've been taking since 1945. So I am an old, old, old New Yorker reader, because I read it through from almost beginning to end. And if you know the New Yorker, their articles are very long and involved, so that takes a lot of time. I also read the Sunday New York Times, and I don't get the Daily Times because it's just too much. And then I'm reading novels and nonfiction on the side that come up.
Our guest is Pauline Adams here on Current State's Voices of Experience on WKAR. What do you think might be the biggest issue facing Michigan State in the future? And higher education, maybe in general.
I believe strongly in undergraduate education. I myself, being a product of the 20th century and not of the 21st century, am obsolete in a way, because I am not a real part of this electronic world. I know that I could not teach over the internet. I know that universities throughout the country have gone in that direction, mainly, I think, for money reasons. It's cheaper. And they're reaching a different generation of students who are more electronically inclined. I, however, believe very strongly that undergraduate education to humanize a lot of our students, and particularly in a period when they're so wedded to electronics, should be a human encounter. I really am concerned about the direction of modern education. Most universities now are into a different attitude towards undergrad. I'm still talking undergraduate education.
You mean beyond the increasing inclusion of online education? More than just the online education.
Yes, I think the way they're hiring their faculty, who is teaching undergraduate work, many of them are not regular faculty. Many are not hired into the regular faculty tenure stream. And it's a different approach, let me just say, which I think de-emphasizes. And it's not Michigan State. It's a trend that's occurring throughout the country. So I don't know. I sound like an old reprobate in a way. But I do. I am concerned about it.
What do you think of the challenges faced by teachers today?
The challenges are enormous in that their profession, particularly at the university level, has been degraded, I think. And the emphasis is on research. I know that many universities offer positions to faculty, promising them less teaching. You won't have to teach. And that's a form of degrading the whole idea of teaching, that you can focus on your research and trying to get grants and working there. Now, I know how important research is to the progress of civilization. I'm fully aware of that, and I respect that. But I don't want to see it to come at the expense of teaching. And a university should be able to combine the two effectively.
Looking back, what do you think matters most in this life?
I think a sense of contentment, of satisfaction, moderation. I don't believe in extremes in any direction. I think they can lead to fateful events that are destructive. I think in old age, the aim should be to find the line where you don't forget the past. You have all those memories, because those memories are what make up your life. But also, you're not crippled by the memories so that you don't live in the present, and so that you're not aware of the future.
Do you wish you'd spent more time doing any particular thing in your life?
I'm selfish enough to say no. I had a great life. I enjoyed it very much, even though it was difficult at times. But when I look back on it, I just say I was so lucky. I was very fortunate that Walter's first job was at Michigan State College. That when he told his classmates at Yale, I have a job on graduation at to Michigan State College, they said, oh, you'll like Ann Arbor. And no one had heard, they had not heard of Michigan State College. But we showed them. By now, everyone knows Michigan State University.
Pauline Adams, all the best. It's been a pleasure to talk with you here on Current State's Voices of Experience.
Thank you.